And good afternoon, Muskegon. It is February the 10th, 2023. Hello, I am your host of the show, Torn Into Your Show for news, information, and more. Let me bring in my co-partner, Pastor Melvin C. Burns II. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, brother. How are you today?
I'm doing real good. It is
All right.
37 degrees and cloudy today. We're wrapping up the series of molestation. It has been it's been deep.
Yes. Yeah.
We hope that we have had a chance to help somebody. We'll maybe put up some emails and addresses and phone numbers of where if you're going through that situation, the main thing is that you tell somebody you don't have to go through that situation.
Yes.
It is not your fault. And here's the biggest advice. If you go to somebody of authority, and if they don't do nothing, then go to somebody else until you get results.
Exactly.
We know that this issue is a hard one and a tough pill to swallow. But here's the thing. If you got one in six homes of children being molested, or adults, or somebody that have been molested, we want to make sure that we have done our part, our due diligence, to make sure somebody knows some way to get help. And one in eight households with boys, those are staggering numbers, but that's true. Here's the other thing. Next week, we start a new series, and you think this one's tough.
Oh.
We start on domestic violence. That's men and women, because there are men out there getting their butts kicked and women that are getting, and you ain't supposed to put your hands on nobody.
Right.
And so that starts next week. So
Mm-hmm.
anyway, let's get to the news. This is the last part of the series, and we wanted a different perspective. And we have a good friend. I consider him a good friend. William Kitchen, that's going to be coming on, and Nate Johnson will be coming on. Let's matter of fact, let's get put your hands together for William Kitchen. How you doing, sir?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Now listen, if you're driving and you would like to see this show, jump on our Facebook site, WVS LP 103.7 The Beat on our Facebook site, or you can jump on M106 Rock and Soul. And hey, Lady J, give Nate a call because he's calling me trying to figure out how to get on. I knew it was gonna happen. Okay, so yeah, give him a call and we'll get him on. William, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Real quick, I was born and raised here in Muskegon Heights. At 14 years old, I participated in a crime that subsequently led me to prison. At 14, I was sentenced to 11 years as an adult in the Michigan Department of Corrections. And then within that time frame, I began doing different things. Involved with gangs. And then I end up stretching that 11-year minimum sentence that the judge gave me into 21 straight consecutive years inside the MDOC. I've been home now almost a couple years. And so I've been really engaged in community outreach, mentorship, and just trying to figure out, put the pieces to the puzzle together and try to repair some of the damage that I helped create.
Now you and I've like been in clear group. I haven't been there in a while. I got to get
Yeah,
back.
I was just there yesterday.
I got to get back there. The reason it's great to have you here because you keep it real. In other words, you swing with a Louisville bat. If it hurts, it hurts. You tell people how it is. Let's start with when you were in. Did you run into guys with like CSC cases and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. And it's crazy because some of the people that you run into, you wouldn't even put in that category. Like, it's no like cookie cutter fit all type of scenario. They come in many different shapes, sizes. What's interesting though is, in my initial introduction into the prison system, I was almost surrounded by a lot of young guys, right? Mm-hmm. Guys that were under 20. And so many of us kind of bonded together, clicked together. And it wasn't until you really get to know a person in their case, then you start to realize, wow, this guy was 16, 17 years old and have committed acts against a woman or even cheats. Mm-hmm. And so, I was definitely surrounded by many people who were charged and were guilty, self-admittedly, to certain crimes in terms of, you know, sexual misconduct, rape, torture, kidnapping, the whole gamut.
Bad burns.
So as you get to know these guys, I'm sure they're coming on saying, is it remorse? Is it just them telling a story? I know it's not one way, but how does it generally come across?
Definitely. It depends on the person and where they at along their journey. Mm-hmm. Some people was very remorseful. You know, they were very much regretting what had occurred. Mm-hmm. Then you will find those who were not yet willing to accept that responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so they made excuses or justifications as to why it happened. And then you have those who would just blatantly say they lying on it. It didn't happen. It didn't occur. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that I've encountered that were admittedly guilty, and some were remorseful, some wasn't.
Mm. So you, in the old days, when you started serving, back in the old days, it used to be where if you created that, if you committed that kind of crime, you were like, it was your butt. You were gonna get in trouble.
Yeah, and it's still like that to some extent. Not as much as it was, you know, 20, 25 years ago. But, you know, essentially, those who came into the prison system with the particular crime of CSD, especially, and then particularly against minors, against children, then, you know, you would be, they're going to take a look at you. You know, you couldn't function. You couldn't run a yard. You couldn't enjoy, you know, the regular hustle and bustle of prison if you came in there with that type of case, with that type of crime. It has got somewhat relaxed to an extent, but there are still certain facilities and certain units and certain people who just would not and refuse to tolerate anybody that comes into the prison system with taking advantage of a woman or particularly a child.
All right. Speaking of, let's welcome to the stage, Mr. Nate Johnson. I knew it. I should have gave you. I should have told you 1:30.
You late?
Nah. See, now I feel bad because William has only been home from prison less than me. I got like 10 years on him, something like that, and he beat me on the technology tip with getting on here. See, I tried to get on through the computer. But it said I didn't have the right, I don't know, whatever. I had to get on through Google and I got Safari. So I feel kind of bad that he beat me to it. So.
All right. Hey, what's up, buddy? Tell Mr. Johnson, sir, would you tell him a little bit about yourself?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So my name is Nate Johnson, and I guess I already spilt the beans that I've been to the penitentiary. I tried to crack a joke on William. But yeah, I'm Nate here in Muskegon. I am the co-founder of Fresh Coast Alliance, which is a prisoner reentry program. And we also work with those coming out of the world of addiction. And I am on the senior leadership team of Kingdom Life Church, which is here in Muskegon as well.
My church as well.
Yeah.
All right. So, Nate. We were talking to William about just getting into some of the stories about guys with cases against children, against women, against men. Tell us some of the stories that maybe you had back in the day.
So specifically with the guys that we've done time with and stuff like that, is that what you're referring to?
Sure.
Yeah. And I came in at the tail end when William was speaking there, And, you know, it's just like anything. Sex crimes are probably some of the most that make people draw back and probably are frowned upon the most in society. And even specifically in the penitentiary, because that's a whole nother world in there. And when you're dealing with sex crimes, it is it's something that's not taken. It's not an acceptable thing, you know. And it's almost strange because the drug dealer will say, well, at least I'm not a murderer, you know, and the murderer will say, well, at least I'm not a rapist. And then, you know, so there's this, it's almost like this hierarchy within the criminal world and in the penitentiary of saying, you know, this one's worse than mine. But I think the fact that it's a crime against a person's innocence is what makes it so, and every person can relate to it. That's what makes it have such maybe another level of negative stigma attached to it. You know, I there's some horrible crimes that I've heard of while I was in prison of guys that I've done time with that I'd even feel uncomfortable saying them here on this just because of how rough it is. But yeah, it's rough because a lot of the guys inside, and William, you could probably attest to this too, probably 90% of us have all been molested before, which a lot of people don't want to talk about that. Don't want to go public and say, hey, I was molested, and it did it created this battle on the inside of me. And some guys I know who we've talked through and worked through and confided in me where they battled with their own sexual identity from that. You know, they thought when they were molested that they were a homosexual after that. Not that they ever acted out or displayed any of those behaviors, but internal, it all stayed inside where through, and I guess this goes back to the question of child molesting and things like that, where the damage that it incurs on people is horrific. And a lot of the guys will say that when I was molested, you know, over the years as I got older, I battled with my own sexual identity, and it displayed itself through this hyper aggression and violence that people are like, why are you so angry? And come to find out, they were trying to prove to everyone and themselves, without anyone knowing about it, that they weren't a homosexual. It showed up in this aggressive thing, right?
Yeah. And most guys that were molested, that molested somebody, they were molested.
Yeah. I'm not sure how that phenomenon takes place, but it is. And all the guys that, you know, where I was in, you know, just connected through and walking with guys while we were in prison, because I pastored a couple of churches inside. So I walked with a lot of guys out of their stuff. And a number of them said that, you know, I was molested, and then hence how I got into the behavior. And obviously that wasn't the only thing. Broken families, insecurities, and all of these different things that are built on. It's not that, if someone's molested, they go out and do these things. But there is a higher chance because of what the damage it does to your self-esteem. Like for me, I was molested, but I was molested by a woman, though. And it produced in me an unhealthy sexual appetite for older women.
Wow.
I think that's one of the things we talked about last week, you know, that mindset of, you know, if you're a young man, you know, now you want a cougar, you want a woman. And you know, back in our day, that, you know, we didn't call that sexual abuse. That was you getting experience.
Right. That's how I looked at it, Melvin.
Yeah.
I mean, and we talked about, we've been talking about this for the last several weeks. Even in my case, you know, 15, 16 with a 24-year-old woman, you know, you the man, but you don't know how later that's damaging you.
Yeah.
And how that is affecting you when you get older. Also, there were people protecting me because they know she was sleeping with other people. Mm-hmm. And look so when I when, go ahead, William.
Look how biased that is, that when a young boy that's 15, 16 years old sleeps with an older woman, he's congratulated. Pat on the back.
Right.
But in the reverse, if a young 15-year-old girl was to sleep with an older guy, then it's kind of like, what? Wait a minute, what's going on?
Right.
Like, yeah. You know, so the stereotype definitely exists in our community. And one thing that I would add to that is that some of us come from an urban setting where, because we have to tie the mental health component into it. Right. Some of us comes into a come from families and communities and cultures where expressing yourself and talking about certain things are so taboo.
Yeah.
It's shunned. And so when someone experiences something like that, they don't have a healthy outlet in order to work it out.
Right.
And so that repression builds up, kind of similar to, you know, to note on what Nate was saying, that repression sets in and then it builds up. Mm-hmm. And then what occurs is once it builds up, now you're taking all your anger, all your aggression, all your insecurities out on the world around you. And then people ask, well, why is he acting like this? Where does it come from? It's some things that was pent up and built up inside of a child for many years without that mental health component that wasn't able to be worked out. And so now it's expressed in a destructive way. And that's what we find back in the prison systems. Hurt people. Mm-hmm. So many of the people that was in prison that hurted someone in that way were themselves a victim at one point. Mm-hmm. Hurt people. And because they wasn't able to really work it out in a healthy way, they took that aggression out on someone else. They began to devalue women. They began to look at kids as prey. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these things, and that's why I say it's important that we kind of tie a mental health component into it, because what other way can we begin to dig into it and solve some of the issues that's occurring and continues to occur in our communities, especially the urban setting where it's taboo and where we can't talk about it and where we can't address it.
And that's what we're talking about. And this is to you, Nate, and to you, William. Because we are around a lot of people that have committed offense like that. And these people are trying to better themselves. And let's put this is not to slam someone. This is for someone, if you are in that environment and didn't get help or need help, we're trying to get you to get help. Nate?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, with the people that come around, I'm thinking you have to have a redemptive lens on how you see all this stuff. Mm-hmm. We have to believe that people are redeemable, no matter what offense they've committed, no matter what's been done to them, that everyone has value. Because if you don't go in, if you go into it with the wrong value system of other people, and you don't think that people are redeemable, then you're not going to take the time to invest in them and develop relationships with these individuals, simply because you don't think that they can change. And I think kind of the rule of thumb is that change always takes place in the context of relationship, right? Yeah. Think of all the relationships that we've been in with people and how we've evolved and changed because we've learned from these people who have invested into us. We've been able to catch their examples and what they've, you know, with what they've done in their lives, the thing that we've been able to learn from them, that's been an investment to us. And we've changed in the context of those relationships. Well, it's the same way with people who have committed offenses and crimes that society may say that they're unredeemable. Well, we got to be able to look beyond that and view everyone as redeemable and then develop a game plan for them to you know, get their wind back and get the ground beneath their feet so that they can come to a place to where they can become self-sustainable. They can be restored internally. And for me personally, what happened with me and why I believe so strongly is because of what Jesus did in my life. He flipped my world upside right. And I believe that that's where true restoration starts with, where it's a real transformation of the heart and then the renewing of the mind, you know.
Right.
And then when you experience that, you know, from that perspective, then you can see everyone as being redeemable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Pastor Burns.
Yeah, I like what you said, Nick, because again, when we think of, you know, sexual abuse, you know, with children, it's like with Greg and I were talking about this last week, is so horrible for people that again, we want to throw people away.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, what do we all say? That's put them in the lowest part of the jail, and, you know, and place a hell reserve for them. And again, people get out of prison. People get back into society that have done these things, and we don't, you know, if we don't do something, they do it again.
Yeah. And the thing is, like you said, it's a taboo issue. Mm-hmm. Now you got somebody that gets out of prison, it has that scarlet letter, and is a label for life.
Yeah.
And you want this person to change, and sometimes these people don't have places to get help, how, like you said, William, to deal with what's inside,
yeah.
How to get that out.
Yeah.
So, question to you, Pastor Burns.
One of the things has come up in the past weeks is this high correlation between substance abuse and sexual abuse, people who abuse. What's been your experience, again, dealing with people in your program?
You know, here's kind of this, and I don't know how much people really kind of take this into account. So I'll give you an example. Let's say someone is addicted to heroin and meth.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, they've developed an appetite for this, and I'm talking about, you know, strung out.
Yeah.
And when you're not able to get a hold of the drugs to kind of, you know, if you're banging heroin or you're smoking meth or crack, when you can't get a hold of the drugs to satisfy that craving, the only other alternative that is powerful enough to distract your mind and your draw, your lure, your lust for that drug is sex. So it becomes a preoccupation. When I can't get the drugs, then I...
And in
time, what it does, it seems like it starts out as simple. Oh, I'm just doing this because I don't have nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. No, but it's anything. It grows in its appetite, and it's obviously it's going to get to a place to where it becomes perverted, it becomes unhealthy, and specifically, like with the women, they'll possibly end up turning to prostitution to get the drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so there is whenever. And here's one thing: you ask anyone on the streets, wherever the drugs are, there's the sex. They're like two sides of the same coin. You can't separate the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's
right.
Crazy, but it's like two sides of the same coin. Where if there's drugs, there's sex there. You best believe that.
Yeah. For sure.
William?
Yeah, to add to that slippery slope, let's look at a different perspective just a little bit. What happens when a mother is highly addicted to drugs? We know that she's not in her right state of mind. What happens to the child, the 9 and the 12-year-old girl that's in her midst?
Mm-hmm.
Right? What happens when the only other option to acquire some finance is maybe look the other way while somebody is taking advantage of your daughter.
Or right? Son.
Or son.
Yeah.
And so drugs, it plays not just from the perspective with Nagay, but also from this perspective, because it lowers and diminishes your ability to cognitively think about and rationalize the things that's before you. You don't see things in the same way that you would in your natural state, right? So it becomes almost justifiable when your daughter is sleeping with an older man, right? Because, you know, there's going to be perks and benefits. Now, you can eat off your daughter while she's being abused by this man because he's showing her that type of materialistic love that she wants and that the mother can also benefit from and take advantage of. And then we add that we're living in a society that's hypersexual. You can't get on that one social media platform without seeing women act a certain way or men or do certain things. And so when we have younger girls that's trying to imitate and mimic what they see, they begin believing that it's okay for me to dance a certain way while I'm wearing provocative clothing. But we know that that's how you let the devil in. That's how you opening up the doors for these predators that exist. And my last point is this: when we start speaking about how everyone is redeemable. How do we get from a point to where we're providing the redeemable resources for those that need it and giving them access to those that have it? Mm-hmm. I hearken to the Brenda Hooper case, an unfortunate situation, but the participant in that situation has a history there. Mm-hmm. So if we weren't able to reach that, people in society need to be mindful. The guys that we send to prison for 10 to 15 years for a CSC case is ultimately returning right back to be your neighbor in 10 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't reach them with the redeemable resources and the access that we have upon their return, then something like Brenda Hooper, as unfortunate as it is, could easily occur over and over again. And that's why it's essential that those who have the resources make contact with the grassroots and the boots on ground so we can sift out who need these resources, who are in need of this redemption that we're trying to give you, because ultimately this is how we protect and save the community. To shun them, to turn your back on them, or even to attack them, it's not going to save the community. It's just going to continue to perpetuate itself.
We have to be better than looking on our computer and saying, ooh, on my block, this how many sexual?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this person was caught,
yep.
You know, because, again, they got that scarlet letter.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's taboo. We don't want to talk about it. But we have to talk about it if we're going to get something done. Nate?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, and I'm sitting here thinking about how I don't even know if I want to say this, but
say it, brother.
Say it.
You know, there's everyone, when we don't view people as being redeemable, we're painting this picture as if we've never done anything that we're ashamed of.
Okay.
Right? And having spent all those years in the penitentiary, and William, you could probably attest to this, I know a lot of guys who are out here in the world that I was in prison with that were fooling around with sissies and were in homosexual relationships.
Yes.
But out here, no one knows about it.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, they would feel very ashamed if we called them out by name. But we don't do that because I believe everyone is redeemable.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we play shame on people, and there's a whole bunch of guys that I could do that to, but that ain't my place. I ain't their judge. I still believe in them. I still believe that they can mm-hmm. prosper, and I still believe that they are redeemable.
Yeah.
So there's people who got stuff. I can't tell you how many guys I've counseled who no one knows about this stuff, that they fooled around with a sibling and that they feel horrible and they're ashamed of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's and so when I hear I don't tolerate it here up at Fresh Coast, but I've heard people, they'll go ham on people. And most of the time it's the people with hidden sin, they invite the spirit of accusation because they see in other people what they actually see in themselves.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. And usually it's the person with the loudest voice trying to accuse people. They're the very ones who has their hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And so you, whenever you have hidden issues like that, that no one, you invite the spirit of accusation. And again, I mean, if it's something you're actively involved, now if something's happened, you repented and turned, that's one thing. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. I'm not speaking to that group, but the group that does that, you invite that stuff, and you want to put people on blast instead of covering, you know, their sin. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, if things are going on, you need to address it and tell the right people.
Sure. Like
you guys get my drift, what I'm saying, right?
Like, yeah.
You don't have to go out there. Everyone can be. I wouldn't want it if people looked at me for the worst decision that I made over 20-something years ago, that people were still holding me accountable for that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't like it, and I don't want to sit here and dress up that me selling crack cocaine in Muskegon Heights and pulling armed robberies off and cracking heads, that is better than doing the other stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, man, look, I'm thankful that I that the Lord's changed my heart and I got a second chance. And I want to be that same breath of fresh air to the next person, no matter what they've done or who they are. And what William said, 95% of all incarcerated people are coming back to our community.
Yeah.
And how we choose to receive them is going to determine what that reentry and what that post-entry process looks like, and could very well determine whether they commit another crime or not. Because shame and guilt and embarrassment, that'll drive someone to go do something stupid.
Right.
Pastor I mean, Burns. You'll get mad. Well, I might as well just go back then. Everybody thinks I'm this. I guess I might as well just do it.
Yeah.
We don't want that. None of us do.
Two things. Tell me, you know, as you guys deal with people, you know, reentry programs, how do you, you know, again, we have this high degree of shame with this and embarrassment. How do you, as you're dealing with people, how do you get them to go beneath the surface and superficial to deal with the real issue? If it's been abused, whether they were abused or been abused, how do you get them to go beyond the surface? And no, I'm good. I'm okay.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we've done and we do really good. Well, number one, about 6 years ago, we purchased alcohol chemical abuse consultants. So we have professional counselors and therapists on staff here. Mm-hmm. It's just located a couple blocks up from our training center on the corner of Roberts and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And part of our approach here at Fresh Coast is we want to bring the experiential world and the professional world together to solve the problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So on the experiential side, in the groups, our facilitators have to be vulnerable themselves, and you have to be able to reveal your scars in order to create an atmosphere of transparency. So like if I teach one class, we probably have about 12 classes running throughout the whole week. I teach one of them on Tuesday afternoons. But if you come in and ask them, all of them, I'm open, and I tell them, you know, about molesting and all the crazy stuff that I've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
So that then they're open with their stuff. And so we really champion and celebrate that vulnerability as the pathway to victory and to healing. Right.
Okay.
And because here's the flip side of it is isolation always produces delusional thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have this, when we withhold and we try to keep things a secret, that's where delusional thinking comes in.
Mm.
And that's how we justify things. So we reveal our scars, put ourselves out there and share, which is, I think when you can do that, that's the proof you've healed is you could talk about those things without shame. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
Will you want to add to that?
Briefly, everything that he says, just said revolves back around. He just spoke on this yesterday. Connection before correction.
Okay.
You have to be willing to be able to engage and make a connection with a person before you can begin to engage in a correction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. I think, you know, that's the method. You know, no one wants to hear from someone trying to correct them if they aren't relatable or connected to that individual.
Right.
And so Nate has done a great job in making sure that the people who lead the classes, people who are leading in recovery and reentry, are people who also experience these things,
mm-hmm.
right? And so they have a different level and different way of engagement in terms of connecting with the people, because once a person becomes comfortable with you, you know, those layers begin being peeled back. And so connection before correction is the philosophy. And I think that's the approach that we all should take. Make the connection first. Don't come in criticizing, trying to correct everything. Get to know a person. Figure a person out. You know, spend some time with a person. Let them know that your approach is genuine. You know, that it's sincere and that you actually care. And when a person pick up on that scent, it makes it even more available and better for that person to be able to reveal certain things that you can correct. But at first you need to make that connection.
How true is this statement? People that have been convicted of that, or a lot of crimes, well, let's say family crimes, domestic violence, rape, molestation, a lot of the times they don't know what a healthy relationship looks like.
Mm.
They,
Well, it's true. And I look back just over our experience of being inside, almost 90% of us all came from fatherless homes, or we had absentee fathers. They were there but weren't there. So dysfunction has been at the very core of how and why we ended up in prison. And again, you can't become something you've never seen. You know, if I've never seen healthy relationships and what it looks like, a healthy relationship in whatever aspect, with husband and wife, or just healthy friendships as males, and healthy friendships with people of the opposite sex, however that is, if you've never seen that modeled in front of you, you can't do it.
Yeah.
That's why there's so dysfunction here in our own and in the country. Mm-hmm. In terms of relationship, because no one's ever seen it. Mm-hmm. Like like the guys that I disciple and walk with at the church, I don't sit and just tell them about having a healthy marriage. They come over to my house and have dinner. They see it. What does it look like to have healthy children, raise healthy kids? Mm-hmm. I don't just talk about it. You're coming over to my house, we're having dinner tonight. Mm-hmm. You're going to see it. And then as certain things arise, right, then they can ask questions. We'll address them. But it goes back to the old adage, most things are caught, they're not taught. And they need to see individuals like ourselves, they need to be able to see what does it look like?
Mm-hmm.
What does a healthy marriage look like? And it needs to be lived out in front of them so that they know what to do when they get in that situation. When they get married, they know how to love their wives. They know what to do. They know what a healthy father looks like. They know what's the difference between a father and a dad. Two totally different things. Yep. Anybody can father a child. It takes a real man to be a dad. You have to earn that name, right? But if we have to model those relationships so that it doesn't get dysfunctional, and a large part of that is because of the dysfunctional relationships, why individuals ended up in the predicament that they did.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, yes, it did. Pastor Burns.
You know, as you were talking earlier, you know, this thought occurs to me. I know you guys, you deal with reentry, but it almost seems to, you know, every church says we're full of love, you know.
Yeah.
But it always seems to me, we talk about whether it's CSC or something else, that those of us who haven't been incarcerated need to educate or train ourselves on how to deal with people. You know, we all said we love people. You know, and everybody swears, you know, we're loving, but I think we come up short a lot of times. Like I said, whether it's, you know, dealing with people, understanding the treatments people need, understanding the difficulties they face and reentry, you know, trying to be forward and honest about dealing with CSC that, again, we're shunning and not, you know, and not offering those opportunities of redemption.
Yeah. No, it's true. And I think that you're absolutely right. And I think that the church still has a lot learning to do on what does that look like to love the world?
Yeah.
We you know, I mean, Pastor Burns, you probably can attest to this. We're as the church, Big C, all of the worldwide church, is great at shooting our own wounded. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's
wow.
Let someone screw up on the time. Where if
we let them in the door. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So think of that. If we can't deal with that within our own ranks first, how are we going to be able to communicate to the world that we love them regardless?
Yeah.
And I don't think that we've, and again, at Big C Church, I don't think that we've done a very good job at knowing how to deal or what our understanding is of healthy cultures. Because if we let Jesus be the standard of what healthy culture is, here's what healthy cultures do. The same culture that produced Peter produced Judas.
Right. Yes.
Now, you'll notice this, that the response to that was not, now if that happens in the church today, if a Judas rises up, we'll make new rules and policies and boundaries to prevent that from happening again. You didn't see Jesus do any of that. It's freedom. Yeah. The good news is you get to choose, man.
Definitely.
And if we don't understand those basic principles that Jesus taught us, that we see in the scriptures, I mean, we're not going to be able to communicate that to the world. That would, hey, come in and we love you. We don't care what you've done. We love you. But if they look at us inside, they're going to be like, you crazy.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. William, you want to add to that?
It's and you can see it. Just I got this. I was reading. Barna Group just did a study. Mm-hmm. In the last 23 years, and just in America, 22 million people who were actively involved in their church have denied the faith. Where they're 22 million.
22 million.
Just in America, and say we're done because and there's a lot of different reasons behind that. Sure. But I bet you one of them is. Because we set a very poor example in how we dealt with people.
Yeah. You know? William, you want to add to that?
So, that's the junior deacon.
So, you know,
yeah.
Well, you know, I have two of my favorite pastors on right now. And I've had several extensive conversations with both Pastor Burns and Pastor Nate. And they both know I'm somewhat critical of the church, so I'm going to be very respectful. But let's be mindful that the church is a hospital. What hospital turns away their sick at the door or receives them and then not provide them proper treatment? I can remember a letter that I wrote to Pastor Burns inquiring about whether or not he accepted or tolerated homosexuality. And I remember he gave me a similar analogy that I just gave him, that while we won't turn away people that engage in lifestyles that we may not agree with, it's our job and responsibility as ministers to minister to them. So whatever that you're dealing with, whether it's, you know, alternative lifestyle, addiction, whatever it is that you're dealing with, it's the responsibility of the minister to minister to you, because he knows that there's a remedy. He knows that there's a cure. He knows that there's an opportunity for redemption there. So what minister would turn you away? What church should turn you away if you have certain things in your lifestyle that may be contradictory to the Bible or to the faith? The problem that we have is that many churches is not projecting that love into society. We can find churches on every single corner in Muskegon Heights, but that love is not being projected into society, into the streets. And so while it may look good on the inside of your church, if you go outside those church doors, it's filth, right? Mm-hmm. So I say I've had two of my favorite pastors because these are the two pastors that I've witnessed, that I've seen take the love that's inside their church and then go out into the community and project that same love and get out there with the people, irregardless to what their lifestyle is or what decisions they've made in their life. They've taken the responsibility on themselves to be a blessing and a benefit to the people. And so this is why I salute each one of them. But yes, the church should be a hospital. No one should be turned away. And then once you enter into those doors, then the process of diagnosing and then coming up with a treatment plan and coming up with some cures and remedies that may be effective in your life. This is the quality of the church. Whenever a church separates from its duty in that regard, we're going to continue to see the community right outside its doors collapse. Mm-hmm.
Now, okay, let me ask you guys this question. Several years ago, I mentored a guy for several years. He had a KCSC case. He is doing great. He's been out for 17 years, has the house, has the family, has everything. How important is mentorship?
It is absolutely imperative. And an individual, I want to make this make sense. There are not enough people around, from my perspective. Now, there may well be, but I'm looking at it from this reentry standpoint within the church. That this is another thing where I think the church could get better at is discipleship. learning how to walk with individuals and do life on life with them, the good, the bad, the ugly, and learn how to love people into wholeness, right?
Yes.
But also the disciple needs to understand that they need someone who has been where they want to go, where they want to be at, and they're further down the road, and they have a wealth of insight and wisdom to give to them, right? A guy told me this while I was in prison. He said, experience is the wisdom of fools.
Say that again.
Experience is the wisdom of fools. And here's why he said that. He said, there's too many people who have gone before you that have blown it big time.
Yeah.
That you can learn from their failures. And he said, I think it'd be safe to say that you're going to learn more from people's their failures than you are from their successes. And I think each of us sitting on this program, we can attest to that, right?
Yeah.
I look at everything here at Fresh Coast. I'm just teaching people from my failures. That's how I learned how to win the war over staying out. I'm just telling people where I blew it at, and I could see now back in hindsight, here's how you prevent this from happening.
Yeah.
I'm just taking on my failures and saying, hey, it cost me 12 and a half years, but here's how not to blow it.
Right.
Yeah.
But we need people who have a strong mothers and fathers, not in the natural, but mothers and fathers that have to have a heart for the next group coming behind them.
Yeah.
To pour in them. And then the mothers and fathers need to know when their assignment is over and the passing of the baton comes. Because a lot of times you have individuals who are trying to hold on to an assignment that has died years ago. And it's running people out of the church. I can't tell you how many people I talk to around my age, 30s and 40s, that, you know, guys that were involved in the streets a little bit, and they don't go to church anymore. They like, man, you know, because they think it's a joke. They're like, you can't, man. They out of touch with reality. They ain't even in sync with the culture. They, you know, they're irrelevant. They're culturally irrelevant is what they'll say. But we need mothers and fathers who can engage with the people that are around us in our sphere and pouring into and inviting them into our homes and giving away all the things that we've learned over the years. Because if not, if we don't pass the baton well, we're gonna find this thing is going to get a lot worse than it's going to get better. Because bad never gets bad, only gets worse.
Right.
Absolutely.
So we have to pour into the next group. It's vital, I believe.
It is vital, Pastor Burns.
When were you going to add something?
Yeah, you know, I one subject I think, and that relates to this that we haven't looked at was, you know, we mentor a lot of kids, man, and we touch bases with a lot of kids. I found that there are many children who are LGBTQ, so forth. And it almost shocked me. It amazed me that how are you so young and able to figure this thing out right now and just say this is what it is, right? And so I had to do some real self-reflection on how do I mentor someone whereas I may not agree with their lifestyle? Do I turn my back on a child just because of what his sexual orientation is? Do I say I can't mentor you? I can't be, you know, I can't speak truth, light, and power into your life because of what you've, you know, chosen for yourself? No. And we find that it's more and more. You know, we traveled throughout schools in Muskegon County. We'd have been all over Muskegon County schools, Ravana, Old Orchard View, Reese Puffer, Fruitport, Muskegon Catholic Central, so forth and so on. And we can see the children who are taking up on different identities other than what they were born with. And it amazes me that, you know, when I was growing up, I couldn't even go to the store without asking permission. I couldn't even go down the street and play basketball without asking permission. So I'm trying to figure out how have we gotten into a day of age where a child can change their whole sexual orientation and not confide in or receive some sort of guidance from their parents, you know? And it goes back to the family structure. It goes back to the family system. We've made our children our adults. We've allowed them to run free and wild to do whatever they may feel and choose. If the parents have allowed it, that's your decision. That's your child. But my point was making is that how do we, and that's a question of for you gentlemen as well, because I look up to each one of you. How do we, because we know that mentorship is vital, it's critical. How do we approach the youth? Because it's a different engagement than approaching a child that's 12, 13 years old that tells you I'm non-binary, X, Y. I don't even know what that means. We just had a kid the other day tell me they was non-binary trans. Had never heard of it before in my life. So how do we get to a point of information and education where we able to do our job effectively? Like, do we dwell off into like informing ourselves on this, learning these things so that we can be conversing in it? Or are we just going to say, you know, don't do that. Don't be this way. This isn't right. This isn't that. This is a child that we speaking of. And it's kind of a different approach when you're dealing with children. So how do we get to that point? That's kind of a bad question at you guys for a response on that.
Well, let me add to that. What do you say to that person that CSC that is at home and not going to get any help because they feel they can't be forgiven? So how do we approach that person, or how do we tell that person to get, because maybe that person doesn't know God, is not religious,
yeah,
or can't forgive themselves about what they did.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go, they're slammed. Or it's taboo because we don't talk about it. We talk about it behind the back. In other words, we go on a porch, their porch, with a leaf blower in their business before we deal with what's in our house.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of questions, but the thing is, effectively, how do we deal with this effectively? Start with Nate.
Well, here's one thought to remember, that we've, as a whole, as a society, we've become great judges of other people's sins, and we've become great lawyers of our own.
Ooh, say that again, please.
We've learned how to become great criminal defense lawyers to our own stuff, but great judges on other people's stuff, right?
Yeah.
And we've developed a habit of judging people by their actions, but judging ourselves by our own intents. Well, I didn't intend to do that. You took it out of context. Well, you said it. You did it. So, but I really didn't mean, and we want people to deal with us by what we say we intended to it. But so there's that. This is a paradigm issue. Mm-hmm. It's how we choose to view not only ourselves, mm-hmm. but how we choose to view other people and seeing their worth and learning how to love people right where they're at. Because thinking that people are going to get cleaned up before they get to us, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Not gonna happen.
Jesus was known as the friend of sinners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the question is, why did a bunch of people who were sinners want to hang out with the most holiest person in the world?
Yeah.
Like that's always been an interesting thought. Like, was he not convicting them? Was he not saying anything to them?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I am being a full-blown sinner myself in my past life before I met him. If he would have been bringing all my stuff up, I wouldn't have been hanging out with him. But I bet this, looking back, I bet this was his approach, just knowing his heart and how he is, that it was his very presence that convicted him. When they were acting stupid and they didn't see him indulging in it, something internally became a mirror to them, like, oh, man, I did sound stupid.
Yeah.
And I noticed the peace, the joy, the things that he possesses I don't have. And I'm always the one having a donkey out here. But he, for some reason, he don't, right?
Right.
What was it? And we need the heart. We need the heart of the Father when we're interacting with people, especially if we're discipling and mentoring.
Yeah.
Because he's not afraid of people's sins. He don't run from that. And neither should we.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
We have the remedy. Mm-hmm. We have the remedy. We have the solution to the problem. And we have to learn how to carry the heart of the Father and exemplify it to the people around us. Yeah. And being available when these issues come out. And again, going back to what William had alluded to, we have to connect before we can correct. You have to earn the right to speak into people's lives. Yes. You can't. We can't, as the churches run in, this is what y'all need to do. Yes. If it was me in the past, I'd have flipped you off and said, hey, Jesus, I'm out of here, is what I'd have told you, right? Yeah. Because there's no connection here.
Right.
Yeah.
If Pastor Burns ran into my life, he's just going to tell me everything I'm doing is wrong. Yeah. I'm like, they're about to be hanging out too long. I'm like, look, screw you and Jesus. I'm out of here.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm gonna give you the fivefold ministry.
Yeah. Laying on hands for real. You know
I'm gonna lay some hands on you. Look, guys, we have 2 minutes left in the show. Wow, where did the time go? Nate, tell people about Fresh Coast and how people can get up.
Yes, Fresh Coast Alliance. We serve men and women coming home from prison, out of the world of addiction, and we have everything from housing. We own and operate our own therapy practice, so we have counselors and therapists on staff. We have an office in Grand Rapids, one here in Muskegon. We have a training center that deals with, we have employment, help put your resume together, working on the soft skills. There's recovery groups, reentry groups. We have an entrepreneurship program called Fresh Start Business Alliance. We have a unique partnership with the college. If a trade or going back on an academic approach is what you want to do, we can help with that. We have jobs. It's a one-stop shop. We do expungement clinics. I recently got my whole criminal record expunged. And so I'm a former ex-felon now. I was thinking about going down to the local police department, filling out an application and doing a selfie and putting it up on Facebook. I'm kidding. But, hey, come down here. Check us out. It's FreshCoastAlliance.org. You can get on our website or stop by at the training center Monday through Friday between 9 and 5 at 1128 Robert Street. We're over here in the Sheldon Park neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And come check us out. If you have a family member getting ready to come home and they need help, again, we have housing, jobs. It's a one-stop shop for anyone coming out of jail, prison, or coming out the streets. So,
ladies, Jay, can you put that hashtag up? Listen, can we have you guys back? Because we decided that we're going to talk about those taboo issues that people are not talking about. No more sitting back and putting our head in the sand. Hashtag torn into touched. Make sure you like that. Listen, guys, would you guys come back? Because we're going to talk. The next series, which starts next week, is about domestic violence. Will you guys come back?
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Our guest has been Nate Johnson, William Kitchen, and my co-host, Pastor Melvin Burns. Man, we get to get to you today.
Yeah.
Huh? I said, we didn't get a chance to get to you today.
Oh, I don't need to be the news.
Hey, guys, listen, you guys take care. Muskegon,
appreciate you.
Go out and sow a seed in somebody's life. Mm-hmm. You don't know who you might be blessing. Take care and God bless. Thank you, guys.
God bless. Thank you all so much.
God bless.